from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about a new initiative from Keep Indianapolis Beautiful.
I'll check out the new Marion University Theater Program.
And I'll talk with Porter Shreve about his new novel, The End of the Book. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. When most of us think about Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, or KIB, we think of trees, parks, and other green spaces. But that's not all KIB does, and Sharon Gamble invited its president, David Forsell, in to tell us more.
So when people think of Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, they think of green, trees, and plants. But your mission is actually broader than that.
It really is. Over the past year and a half or so, we really looked hard at what we wanted to accomplish in this city and get very, very specific and make deep impacts over time. And so our new mission at Keep Indianapolis Beautiful is about helping people and nature thrive in the city. That, of course, has an ecological perspective, mm-hmm. but as well as an economic and social perspective, too. It's sort of those three key areas that we're trying to hit with everything that we're working on.
So people might be most familiar with the 2012 Trees initiative recently.
Yes. Yeah, we did that as part of the Super Bowl out on the Near East Side as part of the Big Legacy Initiative. The neighbors really wanted to have 2012 trees planted in that community by the time the 2012 Super Bowl came along. And not only did we get 2012 in, we actually planted and are ensuring the care of almost 2,900 trees on the Near East Side. It's wonderful.
So you use a lot of volunteers. We're going to talk about the public art program in a minute, but I just want to talk big picture because we've not talked to you in a long time. There are grown-up volunteers. There are kid volunteers, right?
Yeah. So on any given year, Keep Indianapolis Beautiful engages about 30,000 volunteers. We're the largest volunteer organization in the city. And people come from all different places and different perspectives. It may be the pure notion that you're interested in helping someone who may be just a little less fortunate than you are. It may be that your neighborhood is struggling with illegal dumping. It may even be a faith-based thing where churches or companies are interested in either doing something to steward the environment or to show that they're corporately responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So people come from all walks and all directions. It's a thrill and a privilege to be able to unite the community in that way for its good.
That's an amazing number of volunteers, though, for a small staff to shepherd into the right places.
Sometimes I don't know quite how we do it.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. But somehow we do it without killing each other, right?
That's
always a plus, right?
Yes, thriving and
and killing.
And
maybe
killing.
Not necessarily the same.
Yeah,
not
good together.
Right.
And you've settled in. You have an amazing office. I just love your space, which was built how many years ago now, was it?
Thank you. Yeah. 2008 is when we moved in, and it's in Fountain Square for listeners who may not know. And it was a vacant, contaminated place. It had been empty and sitting for 5 years, and we bought it and rehabilitated it. And now it's this gorgeous place to go to work every day. And we actually received a wonderful recognition, gold certification, they call it, from the U.S. Green Building Council for the sustainable efforts that we took in redeveloping the property. So it's awesome.
And
we
you have some wind power, and what are some of the other
elements?
Yeah,
wind power, one of the things that we paid special attention to was our impact on water. Indianapolis has a water quality problem and most likely is going to have a quantity problem too. And so the way our pavement is designed, the way our gardens are designed, is to capture and keep as much storm water as possible at the site to recharge and make well the groundwater at that location and for the rest of the neighborhood.
Just because people might have been alarmed by this, I'm going to ask you to say more about the potential quantity problem.
Yeah.
Are we depleting our natural supply?
Yeah. I mean, there is clear evidence, and planners are working on it right now about what is it that Indianapolis will do to have enough water in the next 10 to 20 years. And so there are all sorts of ideas being cooked up. But one of the things we can do, all of us can work on, is taking care of the water that we have and conserving what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And we can figure out some of those bigger questions and maybe leave those to some other smarter folks than I. But, it's an issue that many cities and many communities are thinking through.
And meanwhile, you have all kinds of great resources on your website and through your personnel about doing things like planning natives that are drought tolerant
yes.
and explaining why you don't really have to water your lawn.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's really true. And yes, what one plants makes a huge impact. I've been very motivated by a writer and a researcher named Doug Tallamy. Doug Tallamy basically says garden as if life depends on it, because it does, and that we are so inclined and have been conditioned in many ways to not plant what is native because we've liked ornamental things or unique things. Well, the reason they're ornamental and unique is because they really don't belong here.
And also because, and I don't know which came first, the chicken salad or the egg salad on this one, because our retailers put things out there and we walk by and go,
ooh,
look, it grows in this zone. I'll just plant it.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so I used to not fully appreciate that natives, I thought, maybe were maybe just because there was a certain sentimentality about our history,
mm-hmm.
Or that sort of thing. That's all well and good. But insects and other life have, over hundreds and thousands of years, adapted to native plants. And so when we plant natives, more insects have food, more butterflies are able to thrive, more birds are able to find the nourishment that they need. And you and I are dependent upon that web of life.
Sure.
And so truly, what you put in your yard can make a huge impact. And of course, at KIB, when we work with communities and neighborhoods and to create parks and tree-lined streets, we make sure to do whatever we can to put natives in.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the natural elements. You have a new partnership that involves incorporating public art.
Yes, it's really true, and it's really exciting. You know, beauty grows. Beauty is green. Beauty are those things that we typically work with, the natural and the wild, even in an urban context. But there is something to the wonderful things that people can do to create,
mm-hmm.
And to make beautiful things. And, of course, we all recognize art in public venues and in public spaces that are distinctive and might tickle our brains or warm our hearts in some way. And so we've begun to work with a number of artists, including the Arts Council, Big Car, many others, a group called Lure Design, to begin to incorporate artistic elements into the green spaces that we work on with communities.
Hmm. How do you start? Are there some sort of parameters, or is it kind of one-off with each space that you're working on?
That's a great question. So the way that our projects work is that neighborhoods or communities or churches or whomever apply to us. What they have to demonstrate is that they have a concern for the long-term well-being of that space,
mm-hmm.
but they also have identified people who are invested in their communities and will be a partner on these projects in the long haul.
So it's not just you guys build us a park and that period, end of.
That doesn't work very well.
or landscape our bus stop and go away. Yeah.
No, that's right. It's really about what is it that the community desires? What are the community's ambitions and ideas? And then we set out to raise the dollars and find the resources to be able to make those dreams come true. And so the same thing applies with the artistic elements that we will incorporate. So great example is a project we did in Devington this past year, and you mentioned a bus stop, where we worked with a wonderful design firm called With Purpose to create a bus hub where salvaged mid-century modern blocks were salvaged from a building that had been taken down in that vicinity of that neighborhood and salvaged and used as part of this bus stop, brightly colored and beautiful.
Brightly colored because neighborhood kids were incorporated to paint them, right?
I saw
some pictures of that process.
That's right. Yeah. So the high school kids in that neighborhood were engaged, and the colors nod to a mural that is just one block away, and to a new senior center where the residents chose the colors of that senior center.
No way. That's
smart. So there's really a sense of continuity, a through line, and it's community driven and community based. So truly an authentic artistic expression, we believe, can happen. Another great example is in the Willard Park neighborhood. We recently worked with Andrew Severns, a local artist, who did his first public art installation that he's ever done. And we were able to get that done informed by the residents of that community, who have this little postage stamp lot. It's actually part of the original Kessler system.
Really?
Yeah. And it fell into disrepair years ago. They're intent on restoring it. And so we've planted thousands of natives there and bulbs. They can't wait to see them in the spring. And this gorgeous piece of art that represents the ambitions and the geography of that neighborhood. And the neighbors chose that design, and then the artist made it happen.
You know, you mentioned the Kessler plan. As a city, we actually should have a little bit of a head start in having beautiful green spaces. Explain who George Kessler was and how his plan might still be seen in our city.
Yes, George Kessler really was taken by all of the streams and the green places that connected Indianapolis. And so when you think about Fall Creek or you think about Pogue's Run or Pleasant Run or the river, Kessler imagined that our city essentially was connected by and animated by those places and that they ought to be kept, restored, and valued. And so the Kessler system has been historically designated, and it is an opportunity to sort of hearken back and see what we can do about restoring these places and appreciating them today.
So the scope of projects that you've described requires some money, so obviously you need donors. You also need volunteers. Are there particular skills you're looking for right now that are in short supply that you want to do a call out for?
Yeah, I mean, we already are planning our springtime projects on these cold winter days.
this and means there will be a spring. Thank you.
That's right. It will be coming, I promise. And so we take any variety of volunteers. We pride ourselves on being able to take volunteers, give them the knowledge that they need on site, on project, so they can feel good about their accomplishment and feel like they've contributed. But we always can use people who love plants. We always can use people who don't mind a hammer and a nail and help us construct some things now and then. School groups, corporate groups, all are welcome.
Sharon Gamble with Keep Indianapolis Beautiful's president, David Forsell. You can learn more at kibi.org. That's kibi.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Marion University Presents is a new avenue for the arts here in Indianapolis, located in the Marion University Theater, the former home of Civic Theater. On February 16th, the LA Theater Works will present a radio show-style production of The Graduate. Travis DiNicola spoke with Ben Tebbe, director of the Marion University Theater, about the program's first year.
Ben, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being on.
Yeah, absolutely. So Marion University, first, not Marion University, not Marion College, Marion University.
Correct, Marion University. We're growing.
You are growing. And Marion University Theater, and now Marion University Presents.
Yes.
This is a whole new arts venue. Very cool. I mean, obviously, I mean, the location of where the Civic Theater was for a number of years. A lot
Correct.
Of people know that
yes.
as the space. But this is all now through the university. So tell me about this.
That's right. There are lots of exciting things happening at Marion University. As many people may have heard, we have a new medical school.
Mm-hmm.
We are growing tremendously. And so there's been a renewed emphasis on the arts at Marion as well. We are a liberal arts institution, and we maintain that identity,
mm-hmm.
and we want to be that, you know, liberal arts school, even though we are focusing in on things like medical schools now as well.
Sure.
So the arts are important, and when Civic moved to up to Carmel, it gave us the opportunity to reassess how we could be a player in the Indianapolis arts community. And so I came back. I'm actually a graduate of Marion University myself.
Nice.
15 years ago, and so I came back to my alma mater to help revitalize the arts program there on
yeah.
campus. And so, yeah, we're open as a rental venue,
mm-hmm.
but we also obviously host a lot of campus events there,
sure.
Which are open to the public. Please come see our students perform,
mm-hmm.
our concert band, our marching band, our show choir, our theater program. And so all of those utilize our Marion University Theater as well.
So tell me, how does the and we'll talk about some of the things that are coming in that you're bringing in, including the graduate. But how does the theater itself that you're running, how does that work with the theater program there?
Sure. When I first came back, actually, we weren't really working in tandem with one another. But
mm-hmm.
actually, I am now on faculty with the theater department on campus
sure.
as well.
So, okay. Well, that
we
makes
will
sense.
Be, yeah, exactly. We will be performing at least one main stage show in the Marion University Theater. The
okay.
theater department will be performing at least one main stage show in there a year.
Very good. Okay.
And like I said, our concert band and show choir all perform concerts in our theater as well.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, then we're also starting to bring in some national and international touring acts.
And this is the presenting
This is the presenting part of the equation. And we want to be, you know, a hub for the arts in this community.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is also just to have that opportunity for our own students
oh, of
to
course.
Have access, easy, quick, hopefully inexpensive access to the arts.
Well, and that makes such a big difference. I mean, being able to have outside performances come to the campus, for any campus, for any college, and for the students there, whether they're theater students or any students, to have access to those performances, to be able to, you know, walk from their dorm to it without having to drive and
exactly.
whatever, you know,
exactly.
but, you know, it makes a big difference, and it makes it a lot more accessible and really enriches the whole university life.
I think. Enriches their education.
Sure.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about this production of The Graduate. It's LA Theater Works, and I just think it sounds really cool because it's done in like a radio show format, right?
Yeah, it's sort of a hybrid. The way they describe it is a hybrid radio play theater production.
Okay.
LA Theater Works has been around for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're a well-recognized organization in audio theater.
And
they have a public radio broadcast that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Their collection is downloadable. They use a lot of famous actors in a lot of their recordings and even on their tours as
mm-hmm.
well. So, yeah, they'll be coming through February 16th, production of The Graduate. It is the adaptation that was on Broadway
right.
about 10 years ago and
yeah.
on the West End. Kathleen Turner and other people
mm-hmm.
like that played the role of Mrs. Robinson. So they'll be coming through, and it's a unique production. It's fully costumed, it's
mm-hmm.
fully memorized, it's lit.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that live theater quality, but it also
okay.
is a radio play. So the actors are standing at microphones delivering a lot of the text directly to the audience.
Mm.
So it creates this intimate experience with the text for the audience and with the actors. And the sound effects are produced live on stage in front of you. They have a Foley artist
fun.
Or a Foley table on stage. So you get to watch that experience as well. So it should be a lot of fun.
It sounds really cool. I mean, certainly The Graduate is not Prairie Home Companion, but but to see this and to hear this, I think, you know, we were talking before we went on the air about the interview about how the movie The Graduate is so visual, and
it's such an iconic film.
It really is, and I love the idea of creating a stage version that relies just so much on the text instead of trying to recreate, you know, those visual film images that maybe you could in any way, that, you know, sort of let people imagine it as they're, you know, sort of hearing the text unfold.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
It is. It's fantastic. And coincidentally, or probably not so coincidentally, this past fall when the tour actually started, mm-hmm. It was the 50th anniversary of the release of the novel, The Graduate.
Okay, sure.
So 1963, the Graduate came out in novel form. And, of course, a few years later, the movie came out in 1967.
Right.
So, and this adaptation, I think, draws both from the novel mm-hmm. and the film. So it may not be exactly the film, which is good. I mean, it's, you're trying to compete with that. Like we were talking, it's tough to compete visually with that iconic film. You know, Mike Nichols' film is... you know, something recognizable. And
exactly.
So,
This sounds very cool. So this is going to be on Sunday night, again, February 16th, 7 o'clock show.
7 o'clock show.
And one of just a number of different things that Marion University presents is bringing to the Marion University campus. Tell me about some other things that you guys have going on.
Coming up in March, mm-hmm. on March 20th, we will be hosting an international award-winning singer-songwriter from Ireland, just a few days after St. Patrick's Day on March 20th.
Good timing,
there.
Yeah.
So come on out and enjoy a beer in our theater mm-hmm. and listen to some Irish music as well. Still looking at what we'll be doing next year,
mm-hmm.
but we have some exciting new things happening. Like I said, we'll be the theater department will be producing a musical in the fall
mm-hmm.
in our theater in the Marion University Theater. And we have great concerts. We also have a wonderful lecture series that happens in our theater as well.
Okay.
It's the Senator Richard Lugar Global Studies Speaker Series.
Mm-hmm. I see you had a number of things on the website. In fact, if you go to Marion University's website and then search for theater, there's a whole listing sort of.
Yeah, marion.edu/mu theater. You can mm-hmm. get right there. It has a whole listing of what we have coming up. It's a multi-use facility, so there's always something new happening.
How big is that theater?
It's just under 500 seats.
Okay,
but it feels much more intimate than that.
Yeah.
Like if when you walk in, it feels like it's maybe a couple hundred people.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice size.
It's almost 500 people.
And it's a great theater.
It's wonderful. I mean,
nice
wonderful
sound
facility.
And, yeah.
They did a great renovation about mm-hmm. 10 years ago, and so it's a wonderful, wonderful venue. This is also kind of interesting. Back to The Graduate for just
a
second.
Yeah, sure, of course.
In 1968, in the spring, so just mm-hmm. a few months after the film was released, Dustin Hoffman actually came to what was then Marion College, now Marion University. He was actually on our campus a few months after The Graduate was released. He was at the time campaigning for Eugene McCarthy, I believe, in the Democratic primary. But we have this a great photo. You can check it out. Yeah, it'll be on. It's on our Marion University Theater Facebook page. If
that's
you check it out, there's a picture of Dustin Hoffman from 1968 on Marion's campus. So that's kind of cool that, you know, it's sort of come full circle, I guess, in a way.
Wow, that's so funny. that's pretty cool. You know, it's so funny that, you know, Hoffman ended up in that role at all. I mean, originally it was the way it was written in the book was for this sort of, you know, tall, blonde California mm-hmm. surfer dude.
Yeah,
obviously not Dustin Hoffman.
Not Dustin Hoffman at all. I went back and read some of the some materials about all the casting. The casting of mm-hmm. Mrs. Robinson went through a whole slew of actresses before they landed on Anne Bancroft, Mike Nichols had a vision for sure for mm-hmm. that production, and now you probably I couldn't imagine it with anybody but Dustin Hoffman.
Not at all. But
and in fact, this the young man playing the role Benjamin Braddock. Kind of has a Dustin Hoffman look to him.
Yep.
And you've seen him on TV. He's been on The Newsroom and some other shows.
What's
like
the name
that.
Of the actor? That's
Brian Tichnell is his name. And Heidi Dippold is playing Mrs. Robinson, has had a recurring role on The Sopranos on mm-hmm. HBO, among other things. And Another well-known name would be Matthew Arkin, who's
Alan Arkin's son, Academy Award winning Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so. This is going to be a great night.
It's going to be a fantastic night. Fantastic night. So please come out and just check us out on Facebook so you can follow what's happening with the Marion University Theater and keep up to date with us.
Yeah. Very cool. Ben, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's really great to hear what's going on at the Marion University campus.
Thanks.
Travis DiNicola with Ben Tebbe, director of the Marion University Theater. The Graduate will be performed on February 16th at 7 p.m., and you can get more information at marion.edu and search for theater. That's spelled M-A-R-I-A-N, so marion.edu. When you get there, search for theater. Hey, Travis?
Yes, Sharon?
I have a few of the conversation hearts I need, but I'm hoping that in your bowl over there you have some of the others. I have, will you go to with me? And I think we need some hearts that say something like a play or
See, I've got hearts over
exhibit.
Here that say IRT, ISO, IMA.
That's what we need.
ICO, you know, get on KIB, get all those little initials on the hearts, right?
That's right. So we're all set up to help you if if your romantic imagination needs a little spark. We're right here to help you with some ideas you can do with your sweetheart for Valentine's Day on our calendar we call
What do we do?
We promise not to crunch the hearts on the air.
And for such a short month, there is a lot going on in February, I'll tell you that.
So true.
Yeah, where do you want to start here, Sharon?
Well, I have something that actually takes place on Valentine's Day. If your sweetheart loves orchestra music, fun orchestra music, and or your sweetheart loves silent films, listen up, because you're going to get double points for this one. The Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra continues its partnership with the Indianapolis Museum of Art. The IMA is screening The Strong Man, a fun old silent film that has ever seen in Indianapolis before. Well, Eric Grayson's probably seen it, but nobody else. And they're doing it with live Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra accompaniment.
The music.
Yep.
Excellent.
Yep. In the Toby.
That is so fun to
and
see
the
live
movies. And you can get
your
glass of wine or your little snack and go in, and it's casual and relaxed and just a lot of fun. And it's actually on Valentine's Day, February 14th. Hurry, though. Get your tickets soon because the Toby doesn't seat that many people.
There you go. Hey, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from Groucho Marx, and it's that outside of a dog, a book is a man's best friend, and inside of a dog, it's too dark to read. So the reason I bring this up, Sharon, is that Frank Ferrante is performing an evening with Groucho. So he is a Groucho Marx interpreter, impersonator, what have you. Groucho's daughter has said, Frank just doesn't do Groucho. He is Groucho. So if you're a big fan of Groucho Marx and the Marx Brothers, and who isn't, then checking out this very fun, fast-paced 90-minute show, it's like seeing Groucho. And it's up at, of course, the Center for the Performing Arts, and it's in the Studio Theater on February 21st and 22nd. Three shows, fun for the entire family, and it could be a great Valentine's Day gift for someone as well.
It could indeed. And if you're saying, who are the Marx Brothers?
Oh, no!
Oh, no. Get yourself to one of the branches of the Indianapolis Public Library. Maybe you should make your way to Central Library, which has
Night at the Opera or Animal Crackers or
Coconuts,
any of those great movies.
The Big Store. Yeah, lots and lots of fun. If you go to Central Library, in addition to stopping and checking out a DVD of a Marx Brothers film, so you can find out more, you can also check out the works of 18 prominent local African-American artists. They are up on view right now, in fact, through March 22nd at Central Library. And it's a collaboration that's been going on for 26 years, put on by the Public Library's African-American History Committee. So lots of fascinating artworks on view there.
It's great
exhibit.
Artists.
And by the way, it's free.
Free.
So if you're looking for a cheap date, I won't tell your sweetheart that it's free.
Something else you might consider taking your sweetie to. Gregory Hancock Dance Theater is doing Down on the Bayou, something kind of hot to spice up these cold February days. They have just opened that, and they are performing that. 7th, 8th, 14th, 15th, 21st, 22nd, as well as the 9th, 16th. Basically, it's all through February, and they're performing up at the Academy of Gregory Hancock, located up in Carmel. And this is one of their shows where they do the limited seating, their annual cabaret-style show, where you you can be really up close with the dancers and performers. And in the tradition of Gregory Hancock, it's, you know, just about as much theater as it is dance in what they're doing. And this is a big celebration of Mardi Gras, so you can kick back and enjoy some snacks and beverages as well as Gregory Hancock interprets music, very fun music from Louisiana and the Bayou, and some good Cajun stuff as well. That is Gregory Hancock Dance Theater. You can get more information at their website. Very cool.
Hot stuff for cold night, huh?
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Hey, dinner and a show available at Beef and Board's Dinner Theater, and this actually is a very romantic choice. No, it's not the cabaret singer Meow Meow. It's actually the great, long-running Broadway musical Cats, which is just full of beautiful tunes that you will go out humming. You and your sweetheart may end up singing at the end of the night. It's actually on stage through March 30th, but go ahead and get your tickets for around Valentine's Day so that your sweetheart won't think that he or she has forgotten you.
No. In fact, I've got a great memory of that show.
The other
show.
Way around. You've got a great memory of that show.
Hey, this weekend, U of Indy Opera Theater is presenting the musical Kismet, a musical Arabian Nights on February 7th and 8th down at U of I. And admission is free for the performances. Performances are at 7:30 at the Ruth Lilia Performance Hall in the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center. And this is their biennial opera theater production, collaboration with the music and theater departments, and includes lots of students as well as professionals as well. And it's based, of course, it's the Tony Award-winning musical, and it should be just a lot of fun. Kismet, that is this weekend at U of I.
And that's also full of beautiful romantic music, all about fate and your true love being led to you.
It's
and
Kismet
so forth.
That
it's
brings
Kismet.
You together.
That's right. Rahad Lakum. It's also got some sexy songs in it.
Okay.
So, you know, on Valentine's Day, you don't have to spend the day or the weekend just with a romantic partner. Remember, you can get your friends that you love gathered around you and
sure.
go out and do something. For example, on stage now at the Booth Tarkington Civic Theater is their production of Steel Magnolias. So you can go into the theater and pretend that you are transporting yourself into springtime Louisiana. It's actually a very fun and classic tale of Southern tale of friendship, struggle, and laughter. And it's about a group of women who have some crazy times together. Perfect comedy drama for mothers, daughters, girlfriends. I mean, you could take a date.
You know, if you're looking for something really interesting to do with your date on Valentine's Day, I am going to suggest going out to Book Mamas in Irvington, because on Friday, February 14th at 6 o'clock, they are doing a drum circle in their Underground 9 studio led by Vicky Mansfield. And how fun would that be? What a unique Valentine's date that would be to go to a cool, funky bookstore and do a drum circle. Why not?
I love it.
I like it, too.
I love it.
Very cool stuff. Also, coming up at Book Mamas on February 15th, they're doing a book launch for David Williams' book. He'll be doing a signing there of his book, Indianapolis Jazz, which, of course, chronicles the rise and fall of Indianapolis jazz on Indiana Avenue and the whole jazz scene. And they've got an Irvington Ukulele Jam on the 20th at Book Mamas. If you haven't been there, it's a great, fun little bookstore out in Irvington.
I'm trying to imagine if the ukulele and drum folks happen to be in the same place at the same time. That could be crazy fun.
Crazy fun.
I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. One more romantic thing, if you can still grab some tickets, go do this quickly. Gail Payne's Agape, A Celebration of Love, explores the ancient definitions of love with her friends David Duncan, who's a pianist, guitarist Sandy Williams, and then Gail Payne, who's a singer who's been putting together some really fascinating shows, mostly about love from a female perspective. This performance happens to be a benefit for the Christian Theological Seminary, and it will take place at the CTS campus, which is a little south and a stone's throw west of Butler University. And it's just a lovely event. Here's some great music. There's a dessert reception as well. And you can find out more if you Google Christian Theological Seminary concert.
Very good. Hey, State Fairgrounds this weekend, Sharon.
Yes.
The Indy Winter Classic Dog Show. Oh, my. That was nicely done. So, always fun stuff going on at the State Fairground.
I love me some dogs.
Well, there you go. This is a great time to check out the dog show at the State Fairground. And you can, of course, go ice skating as well, because they have open skate going on all weekend long. And it's a great thing to do, even in the cold weather.
Don't try to take the dog skating with you, though.
No, no. Those two things don't go together.
I've tried that before. It does not work.
Got a little bit more time, Sharon. What do you got there?
I was just thinking about skating with dogs. I'm so sorry. You caught me unawares. So at the Cabaret at the Columbia Club on February 14th and 15th, Chester Gregory is doing a tribute show. It's called The Eve of Jackie, and it's a tribute to the great singer Jackie Wilson, a very, very stylish performer, and this tribute show does some justice to him and kind of walks you through his career and some of his greatest hits. Again, February 14th and 15th, that's a Friday and Saturday night, Chester Gregory, The Eve of Jackie, in, by the way, one of the most romantic venues in town. The room at the Columbia Club where you see the cabaret perform. Mm-hmm. It's
just lovely. Great windows and
look
great
out
view.
The leaded windows to the monument and take a stroll on Monument Circle afterwards. Just a wonderful, very classy date, actually. So if you're trying
like
to impress
idea.
Somebody you haven't been seeing for very long, there is an option.
You know, we are here to help on Art of the Matter.
Indeed we are.
And we will be back next week with more ideas on what to do with your Valentine on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Writer Porter Shreve taught creative writing for several years at Purdue University and has lots of Midwestern connections. So even though he and his family recently relocated to the Bay Area, he's an honorary Hoosier. His new novel, published just this week, is called The End of the Book, a novel. And it has an unusual structure inspired by the great American writer Sherwood Anderson. Sharon Gamble invited Porter to begin their conversation by reading the first paragraph of The End of the Book.
My father taught at four universities in four Midwestern towns, had three sons by different wives, and wrote two books, one published 40 years ago and the other, Volume 2 of the definitive biography of a once celebrated American writer, always on the verge of completion. Next month, end of summer, nothing left but the index and a little fine-tuning. Over the years, my half-brothers, our mothers, stepmothers, and I had looked into his office. A pack rat midden of strewn note cards, manuscript pages, newspapers, boxes, overdue books, empty cans of Diet Right Cola, and airplane bottles of Malibu rum. Long before his retirement from Central Illinois, everyone in the family, except me, had moved far away from the town of Normal, whose name my father daily defied, so I was the one who had to drop in on him to see how he was surviving.
You know, that's such an accomplishment. In the very first paragraph, we've established this older gentleman, and we're intrigued by him, and we've established the long-suffering son with just one sentence there. That's lovely, and it really makes you want to keep reading. I have to ask, so the end of the book is literal and figurative, and let me ask you to describe the format of the book.
Well, the book goes back and forth in time between the present day and turn of the century Chicago. It sort of begins around 1898 Chicago. And in the present action, the protagonist is a guy named Adam Clary, and he works for a famous internet company in Chicago on a massive project to digitize the world's books. But he hates his job because he really wants to be a writer at a time when being a writer is a real challenge because it's hard to find readers. And counterpointing his story is this story that's set at the turn of the century and is about George Willard, who's the protagonist of Sherwood Anderson's Winesburg, Ohio. And the present-day character, Adam, is the son of an Anderson scholar, thus his interest in George Willard's story. So we're wondering, who's writing this set, this book set in the deep past? Is it the Sherwood Anderson scholar? Is it Adam or someone else? And that's one of the sort of mysteries and curiosities that's driving these twinned stories.
And there's another mystery as well, which is where is this the father of the narrator, whose voice we just heard, where's he getting his money? He seems to be broke. He's gone belly up on a mortgage, and his son is taking care of him, but he seems to suddenly have some money. So we're not going to give that away. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, he ends up certainly at the beginning of the book. His house has been foreclosed on. He's a bit of a hoarder, so it's going to be a real challenge to get all the stuff out of there. And he ends up moving in with Adam and his new wife into a one-bedroom apartment in a fictionalized version of Marina City in Chicago. And that's going to be very uncomfortable quarters indeed for these newlyweds. And later on in the book, we wonder, as Adam's father starts to turn up with a little bit of money, where that's all coming from. Because, you know, he is definitely broke.
So how did you, do you remember your own first exposure to Winesburg, Ohio, to the Sherwood Anderson collection of profiles?
It was probably college. I think it was college, maybe my sophomore year. I was in journalism school at the University of Missouri, but I was taking as many English courses as I could get away with. And it was in that class, and I think what initially drew me to it was that my mother's family is all from a town called Urbana, Ohio, near Columbus. And it's basically a facsimile of Winesburg, and like a lot of towns in the Midwest. And it just felt so familiar to me. My experience with Urbana has mostly been to go to funerals, sadly, but it's where all of my mother's side of the family is buried and where some still live, and it just was so much her experience and my experience going to that place. So that was my initial exposure to it. And then as I sort of, you know, learned more about Sherwood Anderson, we share a birthday.
Oh.
And he really is a kind of, he so reminded me in his life of my grandfather, who was constantly torn between wanting to be a businessman and wanting to be a writer, which seemed impossible. And it was very much Sherwood Anderson's struggle and the protagonist of two protagonists of this book's struggle as well, art versus commerce.
Right, right. I love that Urbana is part of your family biography, even if you are mostly there for sad family reunions at funerals.
Yeah, I feel like I, in many ways, grew up there. I mean, my mother's been a huge influence in my life, and it's so much her family homestead that I feel like I could have been a kid there too.
One of the fun aspects of this novel is that through Adam's father, the present-day protagonist's father, who's working on this book inspired by his literary hero, Sherwood Anderson, we're reminded of who Sherwood Anderson was. And I think he's not nearly as high profile as he probably should be. Tell us some of the writers who claim that their style or their content is at least in part due to the inspiration of Sherwood Anderson.
Well, Anderson's story is so interesting. He was married, had a couple of children, I think three children. He was working at a job and doing pretty well at it in Elyria, Ohio, and he had a nervous breakdown. And for 3 days, he was missing. He went just for this walk. And ended up completely disheveled, bedraggled, didn't know his name, confused, and in some pharmacy in Cleveland. And very soon after that, he moved to Chicago. He left his family and decided he wanted to become a writer and an artist. And within 3 years, he'd written this book, Winesburg, Ohio, on mimeographed paper that he'd cribbed from his day job. and he was living in this sort of, you know, tenement apartment. And he wrote Winesburg, Ohio. And a little bit later, 1919, 1920, it just was this surprise, massive bestseller. It was the most famous book of its moment.
How do you account for that?
It's so strange. I think it was very innovative for its time. Also, if you read, when you think of the title Winesburg, Ohio, you think of this sort of, you know, this conservative and not in the least bit racy kind of story, but it is actually, it was extremely racy for its time. That's part of it. I think it was a little bit shocking. That probably got it some press. It's not so shocking if we read it now, but it has its edge. And then it was so innovative in terms of what it was doing with narrative structure, both a novel and a collection of stories. And when we hear about a novel in stories these days, inevitably in a book review, somebody will say, like Sherwin Anderson's Winesburg, Ohio. And he was a huge influence on Ernest Hemingway, William Faulkner, and to a lesser extent, Fitzgerald. Faulkner called him the father of all of us, essentially. So he, in a way, has been overshadowed by the people he mentored, because there's only so much room in the canon.
The essays of Winesburg, and they really are, they're not stories in the sense of a beginning, a middle, and an end necessarily. There's a lot of ambiguity, but they're beautiful character sketches. Yeah. And I love the way you've kind of channeled that quality into the interspersed stories of a century ago and today.
Thank you. Yeah, Anderson talked about plot as, he said there are no plot stories in life. Life is a loose flowing thing. And Winesburg, Ohio has that quality. It's episodic. It's not there's not a kind of continuous flow. If anything, I've kind of challenged that in my book, because I even though my book is essentially two different books intertwined, both stories are pretty heavily plotted. So maybe Sherwood Anderson would disapprove of what I've done. But I didn't want to do what he had done, obviously. So I did work with plot. I did want it to feel like it had this kind of drive. But nevertheless, I think in a lot of ways I tried to emulate his empathy for his characters and his ability to create believable characters. And I really cared so much about the characters in Winesburg, and tried to find some similars in the book that I did.
Now, you have lived, you've essentially done a tour of the United States in your life and career. And darn you for leaving Indiana and going out to the Bay Area. We need you here, but thank you for being available by telephone. This book is, the end of the book is a novel in part about living in the Midwest but wanting to escape the small town aspect of the Midwest. Is there some part of your own experience and your wife's and your children's that you drew on to create that aspect of this novel, of these stories?
I think so. First of all, it's such an emblematic story in Midwestern literature. And of course, many of my family from the Midwest did leave the Midwest for whatever series of reasons. So I guess I sort of fell right into that story. I mean, the story of George Willard is the story of leaving. And so many of the stories, great stories by Willa Cather, for example, always seem to end at a train station with a character getting ready to board to go to a big city, New York, Chicago, somewhere. And in part because of my job as a sort of as an academic, where you know you often end up being kind of itinerant. But I felt maybe in my nature I just have a kind of innate restlessness, for better, often for worse. I've moved around a lot. And I really loved my time in Indiana. I loved my time at Purdue.
What's next? Are you working on a new novel?
I am working on three projects. I don't recommend this to anyone at home, although My excuse is that one of my all-time favorite contemporary novelists, Jess Walter, came to Purdue about a year ago and said that this is what he does. He works on a novel for as long as he can, and when he feels he's at a dead end, instead of pushing it, he puts it on the shelf. And then he turns to another one and either starts a new one or turns to another one that's been in progress. And so this incredible novel, I recommend it to anybody, that he recently published, Beautiful Ruins, took him 15 years.
Wow.
He's got another one that he's been working on for more than 15 years, and he's now returned to, and he's got another one on the shelf somewhere in whatever stage of progress. So I took Jess Walter is so great a writer. I thought, if he can do it, I'm going to try it too. and so I've got about three things working. One of them is a memoir. The other is a kind of continuation, a little bit of a continuation of the setting of this that I have in the end of the book, namely a series of interlinked stories set in a fictionalized version of Marina City, Chicago.
Ooh.
And then another one that's so in such early stages, I might kill it by talking about
it. All right, we don't want you to do that, so stop there. Porter Shreve, you are missed in Indiana, but thank you for continuing to write and write faster, please. Do not put all three projects on the shelf for 15 years.
Way too long, I know.
Well, listeners, stay tuned. We're going to give you more information about how to learn more about Porter and his previous novels, as well as future projects, and how to find out about the brand new novel called The End of the Book, a novel.
Sharon Gamble with writer Porter Shreve, formerly of Purdue University. Porter's new novel, just published this week, is called The End of the Book, a Novel. It's published by the Louisiana State University Press and is available at booksellers everywhere. Learn more about Porter Shreve and his previous novels, The Obituary Writer, Drives Like a Dream, and When the White House Was Ours, at portershreve.com. That's Porter, then SHREVE.com. portershreve.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll get a preview of the Robert Indiana Show at the IMA.
And I'll find out what's new at the Indiana State Museum.
And I'll find out about the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra's new commission. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.